Escaping architecture school with your life was just the beginning. The profession is deadlier than you think. I'm Tennille, and this is Death by Architecture. Oh, engineers, my little pizza pies. You're not as deadly as I'd hoped. Man, finding stories of murderous engineers is harder than I thought, but that's just a challenge for me. In the meantime, I thought I'd give you a story that will get your little engineer spidey senses tingling. This week on Death by Architecture, architecture and engineering is meant to be a physical display of human ingenuity, creating breathtaking monuments and buildings whose designs are simply to die for. However, sometimes they end up being not just to die for, but to die from. In today's episode of Death by Architecture, the story of four different structures, all of which were built on the promises of beauty and prosperity, yet eventually became known for the tragedies that they play a part in. First up, the Leaning Tower of Pisa in Pisa, Italy. The Leaning Tower of Pisa is easily one of the most recognizable monuments in the world, due to its infamous lean, known amongst Italians as the Torre Pendente di Pisa. It was originally intended to be a bell tower for the city's cathedral. Construction on it began in the 12th century. However, its foundation was unable to hold up due to the soft and marshy ground, causing the tower to tilt. Its final few levels were built slightly taller on one side in an attempt to correct the lean, but this only resulted in the tower further sinking into the ground. By the time it was completed in 1360, it was clear that nothing could be done to stop the 190-foot-high white marble structure from leaning. By the 20th century, this tilt had already reached 15 feet off the perpendicular. This was immediately recognized as a huge risk, especially since the tower was a major tourist attraction, drawing in millions of people per year. Because of this, the Leaning Tower of Pisa was closed to enable a team of researchers and experts to figure out how to reinforce the structure without removing the tilt that had made it so famous. Eventually, they were able to reduce the lean by approximately 16 to 17 inches by removing soil from underneath the foundation, stabilizing the tower just enough to allow a limited entry inside. All in all, after more than a decade and about $27 million were spent on this solution. Despite its breathtaking beauty, the Leaning Tower of Pisa has seen its fair share of tragedy throughout the years. For instance, in May 2012, a 40-year-old woman from Rome committed suicide by leaping off the tower. She wasn't the first one to do this, though. According to local authorities, at least four other women have killed themselves by jumping from the monument, too. In 2018, the Leaning Tower of Pisa once again made headlines when the 63-year-old Japanese tourist fell ill and died on the spot as he was climbing the fourth floor. The city's fire department speculated that the efforts of climbing the stairs contributed to his death. However, no confirmation was ever made. Next, the Willow Island disaster in Willow Island, West Virginia. While the structure itself of the Leaning Tower of Pisa hasn't contributed to any deaths, the same can't be said for the cooling towers that were built for the Monongahela Power Company on Willow Island in 1978. This particular decade had been marked by the construction of coal-powered power plants, many of which were built along the Ohio River. Among them was the Pleasance Power Station, which was intended to carry two electric generators capable of producing a total of 1,300 megawatts. April 27, 1978, construction was underway on the power station's second cooling tower when scaffolding suddenly plunged 168 feet to the ground, causing all 51 construction workers to fall to their deaths. Unfortunately, many of the victims were related to each other. In fact, one family was said to have lost four of five sons, a brother, two brother-in-laws, and three nephews on this tragic day in 1978. An investigation to determine the exact cause of the accident found that the concrete used to hold up the scaffolding hadn't been given enough time to cure, which meant that it was very weak. On top of that, several bolts were missing, while those that were on there were of insufficient grade. Because of this, the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA for short, fined three construction companies, finding them guilty of 20 violations. The cases were ultimately settled for $85,000, which is the equivalent of about $350,000 today. The Willow Island disaster, as it has come to be known today, is largely considered to be the worst non-mining accident in the history of West Virginia, as well as one of the most catastrophic construction accidents that has happened in the United States. On to Chicago, the Iroquois Theater disaster in Chicago, Illinois. But decades before the 1978 Willow Island disaster, another tragic accident took place, only this time it was deadlier, claiming nearly 600 lives. On the afternoon of December 30th, 1903, the ornate Iroquois Theater in Chicago, Illinois, was packed with thousands of mothers, teachers, and children, all of whom had gathered to watch the extravagant musical comedy, Mr. Bluebeard, which starred Eddie Foy alongside a ballerina suspended in midair and actors playing as animals. It was a stunning production, widely regarded at the time as a perfect matinee performance to officially open the five-week-old Renaissance-style building. Only a few weeks before the event, the Iroquois Theater had been deemed fireproof by George Williams, Chicago's building commissioner, as well as Ed Laughlin, who was one of the city's most prominent fire inspectors. Unfortunately, both men had come to the wrong conclusion. During the performance of Mr. Bluebeard, a spark from one of the calcium stage lights ignited a few fuel wooden stage props and oily rags. The flames quickly spread, and before long, the entire backstage was ablaze. Workers attempted to lower the supposed flame retardant asbestos curtain. However, it snagged and couldn't be moved. This wouldn't have helped much at all anyway, since it was later found that it was actually made of paper. As the fire became worse, the lights inside the Iroquois Theater went out, which caused the audience to panic even more. They all rushed to the emergency exit doors. However, 27 of the 30 doors were reported locked. Unfortunately, the teenage ushers manning the exits had fled the scene the minute they heard that there was a fire. In their haste to escape, they neglected to unlock the emergency exit doors, trapping patrons inside the burning theater. An estimated 1,700 people, excluding the standing ticket holders who had sat in the aisles during the performance, were quickly evacuated, but a stampede ensued as everyone tried to save themselves. The actors were desperate too and opened a rear stage door to escape. However, this caused a backdraft, which resulted in a massive ball of flames exploding inside the theater, killing practically everyone in the balconies. The audience members there had been unable to escape due to the metal accordion gates that were placed to prevent those in the upper levels from sneaking down to the better orchestra seats during the intermission. Later, Eddie Foy would write in his memoirs that he saw in the balconies a quote, "Mad animal-like stampede, their screams, groans, and snarls, the scuffle of thousands of feet, and bodies grinding against bodies, merging into a crescendo, half wail, half roar," end quote. In the end, 591 people died in the Iroquois Theater fire. Most of them had been seated in the upper levels where they were trapped and doomed to a fiery demise. When the authorities entered the theater afterwards, they described the scene that awaited them as one that seemed to be in the vision of hell that Dante Alighieri had in his mind's eye when he was writing The Inferno. The grief-stricken residents of Chicago were outraged by the accident, particularly because the Iroquois Theater had been labeled as fireproof. Because of this, George Williams was charged and convicted for malfeasance, while the theater owners were found guilty of manslaughter due to the poor safety measures that he had implemented. This conviction wouldn't stick, though, as his subsequent appeal was granted. Also, the city's mayor was indicted. However, the charges against him were quickly dropped. For the deaths of nearly 600 individuals, only a saloon owner was charged with the looting of the dead bodies, and he was the only one that was made to serve any jail time. And lastly, the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in Weston, West Virginia. History is littered with stories like the 1903 fire at the Iroquois Theater, where hundreds of people needlessly died due to human hubris and the failure to implement proper safety measures. Another one of these stories is the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, a psychiatric hospital in West Virginia that operated from 1864 to 1994. Originally named Weston State Hospital, it was created by a man named Thomas Story Kirkbird, who believed that mentally ill patients could be cured if they were allowed to roam free. Because of this, the asylum was built with long wandering hallways in a staggered formation, which allowed plenty of sunlight and fresh air. Life at the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum was incredibly therapeutic for its first few patients, but by 1938, it was no longer functioning, but rather a dumping ground for mentally ill people. The facility had originally been built to house 250 individuals, but this was soon six times over capacity, with rapidly decreasing food supplies and conditions that were increasingly becoming inhumane. Patients were crammed together into small rooms, running wild and behaving out of control during the day. At its peak in the 1950s, the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum had at least 2,600 patients. Many of them slept either on the floor or inside freezing rooms with neither furniture nor heat. The windows were covered with thick layers of grime, dirt, and mold, while the wallpaper peeled from decay. Doctors at the facility also started experimenting on patients, performing more than 4,000 lobotomies, which left many with irreversible brain damage and hemorrhages. Okay, guys, this is really, really graphic, but they frequently used the ice pick method, which involved slipping a thin, pointed rod into the person's eye socket, bringing down a hammer upon its end to forcibly sever the connective tissues in the brain's frontal lobe. Unsurprisingly, this led to deaths of many patients, some of which were left undocumented. In 1994, the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum was finally closed down due to changes in how mental health illnesses were being treated. Since then, it has been turned into a museum that offers both daytime and nighttime tours, as well as ghost hunts that enable visitors to experience firsthand how patients lived and died within the facility's open halls. Much like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, the Power Plant Cooling Tower in Willow Island, the Iroquois Theater, and the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, many other structures found across the world were initially built with good intentions, yet ultimately bore tragic outcomes. Despite their beautiful designs, they eventually became places associated with accidents, fatal human errors, and deaths. Needless to say, these sorts of buildings have become stuff of urban legend. That's it for Death by Architecture. Stay safe, everyone. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Death by Architecture Pod. Also, you could have listened to this episode early on Monday instead of today by joining the Murderous Mondays email list. I want to help you get through your Mondays, because trust me, I know Mondays are crazy. So get a little murder in there. Go to www.deathbyarchitecturepod.com and sign up today.